for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome back to Middle East Forum Radio here on WWDB, 860 AM Philadelphia Talk. And my next guest is someone that I've had the pleasure to get to know over the last few months. We recently ran into each other at a conference covering Turkey, but that's not the subject of our interview this morning. Michael Prejean is a senior fellow and Middle East analyst at the Hudson Institute, a former adjunct lecturer at the College of International Security Affairs, and a visiting fellow at the Institute for National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University. With a 20-plus some year career in the U.S. Armed Forces, part in the U.S. Army, part in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and also with tours, I believe, Mike, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, to Iraq and also other Middle Eastern countries. He brings a wealth of knowledge to speak about our next subject, which is Iran. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Let's get right off the top. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo recently announced that the United States would use our legal authorities to sanction corrupt individuals stealing Iraqis' wealth and those killing and wounding peaceful protesters. That's a big change from our policy of working with the same people in government that Iran supports, no?
Yeah, it's a big deal to have the president actually recognize that there are protests going on in Iran, back the protesters, and start to threaten to name individuals to be sanctioned. There will be sanctions upcoming, and those individuals will be named.
So sanctions are put on members of the IRGC, that are put on members of the Iraqi government that may be backed by Qasem Soleimani, the head of the IRGC's external operations wing, the Al-Quds Brigade. But what are sanctions actually doing? I mean, how is this going to affect the ability for America to influence policy in Iraq vis-a-vis their interlocutors there versus the ability for the Iranians to influence what's going on in the country?
Well, Iraq is basically a place where Iran is able to offset U.S. sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And by the U.S. threatening to sanction economic sectors, ministers of Iraq's economic ministries, oil, gas, electricity, that puts a lot of pressure on Baghdad. Also, we are the guarantor for all of those loans that are going into Iraq's reconstruction. So we have a lot of tools, a lot of smart power and soft power to use to be able to put pressure on Baghdad, pressure that we have not exerted yet.
Let's go back to Iraq protests 101, and we'll get to the Iranian protests too. But in the last few days, we've seen the resignation of the Iraqi Prime Minister, Haider al-Abadi. We've seen the rise of this, what seems to be leaderless street movement against the central Iraqi authority in Baghdad. We've seen attempted entries into the Green Zone. This may have had to do something with the firing of the head of Iraq's counterterrorism division. Take us back to the beginning of these protests and walk us through the timeline of how we got to this point where so much pressure was put on the prime minister to force him to resign.
Well, these protests began last year. And at the time, the protesters burned down the Iranian consulate. And in the contrast to where we are today, last year, the State Department condemned the protesters for burning down the Iranian consulate, specifically Brett McGurk. This year, it's a much different story. The protesters have burned down the Iranian consulate in Najaf three times already this year.
The third time was yesterday, right?
Yes, exactly. basically, the complaint is that a country that can export 3.6 million barrels of oil a day cannot provide clean water, electricity, internet, and jobs to a community that it's taken for granted. And the community I'm talking about is the Shia population of Iraq. 70% of the country is under the age of 30, and 60% of the country is Shia. Now, when the Sunnis and the Kurds have protested in the past or tried to use the Constitution to strengthen their positions, they've been met with force. They've been fired at in Ramadi. Sunni protesters were killed in 2013, and Baghdad's claim was this is the beginning of ISIS. This is the beginning of Daesh. When the Kurds tried to use the referendum in 2017, they were met with heavy-handed tactics from the counterterrorism service and also the Shia militias tied to Qasem Soleimani, specifically Kitab Hezbollah and Asab Ahl al-Haq.
And the Kurds lost their control of Kirkuk, I believe.
yes, they won the referendum, and then they took away territory by force, they being Baghdad, with a green light from the U.S. and basically two militias that Qasem Soleimani created under the Iran deal. Two militias, two additional militias that he created under the Iran deal also participated, but the two militias that really took credit for Kirkuk were Kitab Hezbollah, led by Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who's a designated terrorist who's killed Iraqis, Kuwaitis, and Americans, and AAH, led by Qais Ghazali. And the protesters this time, this is different. These are the Shia youth protesting against the status quo, protesting against the Shia religious parties tied to Tehran, blaming Iran for Iraq's inability, for Baghdad's inability to manage an economy, and basically protesting against politicians that are more beholden to Tehran than they are to the Iraqi people.
So tell me a little bit about some of these Shia politicians on the Iraqi side. I heard a rumor that it may have been the Saudi government that had financed the rise of Muqtada al-Sadr after the re-entry of Saudi diplomatic representatives into Najaf or Karbala. You're going to have to correct me on where exactly their consulate is outside of Baghdad. But there may have been support for al-Sadr by the Saudis. Now, that's a Sunni majority government supporting a Shia politician being their neighbor. What's going on with that?
Well, I got to just get this Sadr narrative straight. Muqtada al-Sadr was looking for a paycheck, and the Saudis have always been willing to dish one out. When Muqtada al-Sadr went to Riyadh to meet with Mohammed bin Salman, he went to Tehran 3 days later to apologize for that visit. Muqtada al-Sadr is somebody that Qasem Soleimani and Nasrallah from Lebanese Hezbollah has always been able to influence. I spoke to some Saudi officials last year and some Saudi officials about a month ago and asked them how that relationship with Muqtada al-Sadr is going. And I also said that Qasem Soleimani doesn't care if the Saudis paint the desert green in Iraq as long as they don't interfere with Iran's strategic goals. And Muqtada al-Sadr is not interfering with Iran's strategic goals. One point of clarification, these protests have nothing to do with Muqtada al-Sadr. He's tried to hijack this protest movement several times, only to be rejected by the Shia youth. They are rejecting all parties, to include Sarayun Party, which is Muqtada al-Sadr's party, and also the Hikma Party, led by Hakim. They want a movement that is based on economic rights, prosperity, opportunities. They want to see Western investors, professors, entrepreneurs, and tech people instead of, you know, people in uniform and diplomats. They're tired of this engagement from the West simply being a military one and a diplomatic one that has led to shoring up a government that is more beholden to Tehran than it is to Iraq.
So this is the situation as we see it right now. What are the avenues forward? So you have al-Sadr, who is, you know, somewhat in line with the Iranians. You have these new Shia representatives who are speaking on behalf of the youth who want to be more Western. 6 months from now, where do we go?
Well, 6 months from now, it'll be colder. There'll be heating issues. There'll be electricity issues. But I'm concerned that the West will simply be happy if there's another prime minister that appears to be moderate. It doesn't matter who the prime minister is. It doesn't matter who the president is. It doesn't matter who the Speaker of the House is, as long as four individuals remain influential. Those four individuals are former Prime Minister Maliki, Nouri al-Maliki, Hadi al-Amri, leader of Badr Corps, who's in charge of all the militias, who controls the Fatah Party, which has allied itself with Maliki's party, State of Law, and they basically are the kingmakers in the Council of Representatives. They decide who the prime minister will be by using heavy-handed tactics, bribes, influence, threats, and they are both tied to Tehran. They are both tied directly to Qasem Soleimani. So it doesn't matter who the prime minister is, as long as Hadi al-Amri, former Prime Minister Maliki, Qais Ghazali, and this individual. I have no idea why this individual still has power in Iraq. And anytime you ask the Department of Defense, State Department, or the intel community, why is Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis still in a leadership position. He's the deputy director of the Shia militias. He gets a government paycheck. He has access to U.S. intelligence, U.S. funds. His militia members receive training and equipment from the U.S. Train and Equip program. This guy's a designated terrorist. His organization, Kitab Hezbollah, is a designated terrorist organization. And he has a government paycheck, a government office, and you have to walk by his office to get to the prime minister's office. And anytime I ask a State Department official, defense official, or intel official, that stumps them. And that shouldn't be the case.
Who on the American side is dealing with this portfolio?
It's a new American every year. That's the benefit that these Iraqi politicians have. They've seen 18 iterations of the U.S. advisor, 18 iterations of the person they're supposed to talk to about security issues. And they had developed the playbook. There is no institutional knowledge that's being captured on the American side that can deal with these individuals. Everybody who knows these individuals, all those you know, former generals, former intel officials, former State Department of Defense, are now out of government or working other portfolios. So it's very easy for a seasoned Iraqi politician tied to Tehran to be able to tell an American in an English accent, a British accent, I'm trying the hardest I can. These things are very difficult. You just need more American money and more American training, equipment, and we'll get it sorted out in the future. And that's the tactic, to wait out until you get the next American so you can, you know, put the playbook back in play.
So we see the Iranian thumb in the Iraqi pie. Tell us about the protests going on in Iran right now. There's been some horrendous reports that are coming out about massacres going on throughout Iran, not just in Tehran. It was 10 years ago during the Students' Revolt, during the Green Revolution, or even what it was 2 years ago in December of 2017 when we had the revolts and I'm going to forget the name of the town. Anyway, the northeastern Iranian blue-collar town where it was being led by the bus drivers committee that was there. What's going on in Iran right now?
Well, the thing that's going on in Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon is the people are fed up with the mismanagement of economies, and the people that are leading these economies are all tied to Tehran. Of course, Iran is tied to Tehran, of course. But what's interesting about this is they're leaderless, they're organic, they are spontaneous, and they have momentum. And now they're in Iraq, Iran, and Lebanon. So Iran built a land bridge from Iran to Lebanon, you know, in order to put pressure on Israel. And the best thing about that land bridge is protesters are occupying it. Protesters are occupying it in Iraq and taking away that land bridge to Syria. Another interesting aspect of these protests is in Iran, Qasem Soleimani is bringing in Iraqi militias to deal with the Arab communities and also the Persian communities. So the preference is use Iraqi militias to go after Persians that are protesting, use the SEPA or the IRGC Basij to go after Arabs and Ahwaz in Iran, and they're also bringing in Fethi Mayun. And those are the Afghan militiamen that were deployed to Syria. So upwards of 10,000 were deployed to Syria. They're bringing in Afghan and Pakistani militiamen into Iraq and Iran to go after protesters. Qasem Soleimani knows that his Basij and his SEPA cannot go after Persians. So they use the Afghans and the Pakistanis to go after the Persians. But they can go after the Arabs. It's such an interesting dynamic that Qasem Soleimani believes he can deploy, well, he's actually implementing it. He can deploy militias from Syria and Iraq to deal with the protesters. We haven't heard reports that they're in Lebanon yet because Lebanon's a much different situation. But in Iraq and Iran, they are able to kill protesters without the international community condemning it. We've heard a lot of condemnations from Amnesty International, from the United States, from Israel, but we're not hearing those condemnations from Europe. And this is not the time to reward Iran with this INSTEX program, this bypass mechanism for sanctions. This is the time to hold the Islamic Republic of Iran responsible for killing protesters in Iran and Iraq. And that's the current situation. The protesters simply want a spotlight put on these movements in Iraq and Iran. They want media coverage. They need Western media coverage. These protests are built for Western democracy support. We're just not getting it out of Europe.
And do you think that it's possible for the U.S. to help stoke the flames in Iran and Iraq? I mean, are there measures that the American government, perhaps clandestine measures, that they can take to further embolden more protests against the regimes?
Well, I think the United States should name those individuals in Iraq. Hadi Al-Amri, in charge of the Ministry of Interior, through his Badr Corps and also the militias. You can put IRGC Quds Force militias on the AUMF, the Authorized Use of Military Force. Right now, we can only target Sunni terrorist groups. We cannot target Shia terrorist groups. That should change. Doesn't mean we have to start targeting them, but the message would be loud and clear. But the biggest thing is encourage Western media to get into these countries. Have the international condemn the government's internet blackouts, where they shut down the internet while they kill protesters, and also to basically, you know, provide more Wi-Fi, more internet access to Iraqis and Iranian protesters, but encourage Western Europe to do the same. Encourage the regional allies to do the same. The status quo response to these protests by simply nodding when a new prime minister is put in place in Iraq, it's just not going to work with Iraqis this time, as long as those individuals that I mentioned earlier still maintain power.
And are there other Arab states which are trying to take advantage of the situation in Iran? We're talking sort of like in a binary focus here, right? The U.S. should name Iranian-backed individuals in Iraq. The U.S. should highlight what's going on in Iran itself with more Western media coverage. You talk about Western Europe getting involved. What about other regional actors? What is their responsibility? What tools do they have available to them that may be a little bit different than the U.S.?
Well, you know, anything that allows Tehran to say this is an Israeli, Saudi, U.S. Operation to back saboteurs, I think is something we should stay clear of. We're not very good at this. We didn't support the 2009 Green Revolution. So when let's take Venezuela for example. When Guaido came to our attention, we said we support Guaido. We thought that would be enough. It wasn't enough. You have to do more than just say you're behind something. But in the case of Iran, we don't want it to have an American face. We don't want the Iraqi protests to have an American face. We don't want it to have a Saudi face. We don't want it to have an Israeli face either. This is an opportunity where the people that are protesting are willing to die for change. I mean, they're getting shot in the face by militias tied to Qasem Soleimani. They want international media focus. They want the international community to condemn these governments, to put sanctions on these governments. The condemnation, the voice of support will go a long way. And after that, once we shine a spotlight on it, hopefully we can see some solutions. We can see some possible outcomes, some people we can get behind. There's a search for Guaidos in Iraq and Iran to get behind. The problem is Qasem Soleimani finds them before we do and disappears them. So that's the issue. We need a spotlight on the individuals that have disappeared. We need to remember four or five names. You know, it's that easy.
God forbid if we try any Adelawi or Ahmed Chalabi. We've tried the outside in. Now let's try the inside out. Mike Pregent, senior scholar at the Hudson Institute. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.